Interview with Martha McKay, M-C-K-A-Y, November 20th, 1974, Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
I wanted to ask you really about women in politics, and starting with North Carolina, the impression we have is that in North Carolina, women in politics, the state of women in politics is more advanced than anywhere else in the South.
I think that's probably right. Tell you the truth, I've been, we had 25 or 26 women to run for the General Assembly, and I don't know how many won, if you want to know the truth, because NNO hasn't had a story on it, and I have been out of town almost solid since Election Day. I know some of the women that won. I know Kathy Sebo. We have two women in the Senate. And I know a lot of the Democratic women won, but obviously a lot of the Republican women lost. But I suspect it's a plus. Do you know what it is? It's over the nine.
I know.
Nine last time.
I think it went from 9 to 13. I'm not sure of that.
That's probably about right. Because of the 26, it wasn't. There were quite a few Republicans on there. And we all know that. I think most all the new Republicans got beat. And a whole bunch of the old ones.
Right.
But at any rate, that gives us quite a jump. With nine, we had more than New York State last time. They didn't have but about seven. Yes, I think
and
women...
Certainly no other southern state has anything approaching that.
Mm-mm. No, I think it's partly because of the caucus. I think the, even though the caucus hasn't done this past year what it should have done, that's partly because the, partly because of success.
What's your role in the caucus, women's political?
Well,
caucus?
I'm still on. I organized it,
right,
and founded it, and I was chairperson for
this
year.
When?
Let's see. I believe we met in January 71. When was the last gubernatorial race? 72.
Right.
Okay, January 72. We started working on the fall of 71.
Is this the first statewide political, women's political caucus
South?
Or in the country?
No. It was one of the first in the South. It was certainly the first that had anything like, you know, the attendance and so on and so forth. We did. I believe Texas might have met before we did. But I don't, hardly anybody in the country had the number that we did on the first turnout. We had about 1,000.
This were members?
Well, there was. We were just organizing the caucus at that time, so.
What, 1,000 at an organizational meeting?
It was the organizing meeting.
And there were
of the caucus.
Roughly 1,000 there. Mm-hmm.
And we had the.
Just tell me what's happened since then.
Well, a lot of women ran. The reason we had. We killed ourselves to have the caucus meeting at the time we did, which was toward the end of January, was to give time for women to file in the primary and to encourage them to do so. And a number of women filed directly because of the caucus. Grace Rohr was one. Liz Harris.
Who is she?
Grace Rohr is secretary of, they've changed the name, Cultural Resources, isn't that what they've changed it to? She's a Republican. She ran and got 45% of the vote. She ran for, I believe she ran against that year. I believe she ran for Secretary of State. And she was a founding member of the caucus. And I believe it's because she ran that she got that appointment. She was also vice chairperson of the Republican Party, but that made her the clear choice if a woman was going to go in Holzhauser's cabinet. Made Grace the clear choice, and she did indeed go in. And has been instrumental in, as has the caucus, in some reorganization of the Commission on the Status of Women, although they call that in North Carolina Commission on the Education and Employment of Women, which has gotten budget funds for the first time under Holzhauser. And it's not much, but then we don't complain. It's a foot in the door, you know, only about 60 or 70,000. But there's a full-time executive director plus two other part-time staff members. And so and it has got some new blood on there. If you want to talk about ripple effects, Holzhauser has an affirmative action program. I don't know how much he's doing with it or how good it is, but he has one, and I do think that he certainly has been aware of women. So he was one of the ones that came to our meeting at Duke when we had all the gubernatorial candidates at the Durham meeting, the first meeting, and that's the one where Skipper didn't come. Okay, in terms of appointments, we've done a lot of things. For one thing, we have a resources bank, if you want to call it that, a talent bank of women who are willing to serve and want to serve on state commissions. And we have their credentials or qualifications or whatever. And Holzhauser has received our recommendations and asked for them. And working through the woman who's head of the talent bank, and with the support of the key Republican women who are part of his administration. And we consider that quite, good as far as we're concerned, because...
And has he made appointments as a result of that?
He is... Are you saying, has he made more appointments than he would have? I think he's made more than he would have?
Yeah.
I think he's been more conscious of it. Now, for instance, and then too, it makes a difference to us whether a woman has some interest in changing the status of women in politics, if she's going to be put on a commission. I mean, we don't want one of the boys on there. We don't want to particularly see women that are one of the boys who won't try to help women. So we have one of the caucus founders on the State Goals Commission. We have one of
My question is, have the women that Holzhauser appointed been mostly women who came out of that talent bank?
I couldn't tell you in terms of overall figures. I can just tell you that he has accepted a great many of our recommendations.
Okay.
Now, whether or not we have put in a recommendation for everything that came along, I don't know. And I'm sure that he had some appointments that, women...
But it's been more than window dressing, that's what I'm trying to say.
It has definitely been, most definitely been more than window dressing. Most definitely. And, the caucus had an appointment with Holzhauser. He went he was sworn in January. I believe before January was out, or else early February. And expressed his interest in cooperation, so on and so forth, and has been pretty responsive. We haven't asked him for a whole lot, other than the appointments. We've wanted the appointments.
What's been the role of the caucus in terms of encouraging candidates or recruiting candidates?
Well, we have. One of our big pushes has been to encourage women. We have now had three statewide meetings. The second one was in Raleigh, the third was in Charlotte. And each time we have a meeting, we have workshops or seminars on being a candidate. The last time we met in Charlotte, we had a fantastic guy down there from Washington, Republican, who's in the business of...
Who was it?
Boy, it's the firm that Percy had hired. They're liberal Republican types. And he was working for Milliken, I think. I can't remember his name, sorry. But he was A number one, gave us a lot of, insights and a lot of things we didn't know. Really terrific. In terms of pragmatics, here's why you ought to run and here's how you should do a campaign and so forth. I'm drawing
that's all right.
A blank. I don't...
So he came. He gave just a lot of nuts and bolts.
It was either free or very low.
But he gave a lot of nuts and bolts kind of talk.
Well,
here's what you do if you want to run.
Yes, but not only that, he gave us some facts on what was happening to women around the country, and he went down the myths about women for running for office. And
such as?
The myth that a woman, because she's a woman will have a harder time getting votes. He says that's a myth. The reason that we all believe that is because so few women, relatively speaking, have won. But as a matter of fact, he said, it isn't, you know, so. When money is harder, yes, for women. And he also said that, told us that women come through as honest. Happens to be, you know, number one of the top things on the list this year happened to have been that women project as honest with, and many of them without the old Paul overtones. And so he gave us what is actually happening from the point of view of polls, experience, and so forth, plus some very good campaign with pragmatics. He had a whole, I don't know, 6 or 7 page sheet, all checkpoints, and very good. And so in addition to speaking to the group as a whole, he then held a, you know, small seminar group. And then, of course, we at that the last time we met in Charlotte, we had, of course, our women legislators who came and had a panel for the women to tell about how, what it was like, plus some other women that had been elected. Marilyn Bissell, Joanne Gardner, and others. So, yes, I say we definitely have encouraged women to run, and we have met with them as legislators, the ones who got in the legislature, to talk about women's issues. They helped with the ERA, with the exception of Betty Wilkie, and she was against the ERA.
She was a senator.
Yeah. Marilyn Bissell introduced credit bills that passed, and generally speaking, the women in the House were pretty much together on women's issues. We think that's a big help. Women are, there are more women party chairpersons now than there ever have been, and again, I'm sorry.
In the county level.
Yes. For the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know about the Republican Party, but at one time, not too long ago, there were only about 2 in the state. And there are at least 8 or 10 at this point, county chair people who are women.
How about one of the state committees, executive committees, of the 2 parties?
I'm
asking you on the state executive committees of the 2 parties.
Yeah, the Democratic Party, I cannot give you a specific breakdown, but there are a good many women. I think there's not, it's not 50%, but I would say it's pretty good representation. And again, I don't know about the Republican Party. There are women inside the Republican Party who are working for broader representation and who feel very strongly about it. So. I would say the caucus, even women that it hasn't been in direct contact with, because it's there and because women did run and were successful, has had a spin-off effect with other women. There is a woman who's thinking about running for lieutenant governor next time.
Republican or Democrat?
Democrat. And
could be a very interesting race.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, we think it's great we have 2 women senators, and both of them are progressive to liberal. And I think they'll be good for
so you think the caucus basically has sensitized women in North Carolina?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, certainly has.
And it's broken the psychological barriers.
I think it has for a lot of people.
But do you see a trend in, I mean, this trend continuing that more women will run and more will be elected?
I certainly think so, yeah. See, they're being elected on other levels, too. There are quite a few women county commissioners. They're beginning to understand that critical decisions are made on that level. So they're more running the county commissioner. And we have some people who are serving very well in county commissions. So yes, I think it's. I think it will continue.
Does the caucus have dues-paying members?
Yes. I started to tell you, the woman who's been chairperson for the past year was persuaded to become a candidate for the legislature, and as a result, just hasn't kept up with caucus business the way she should have. so I hope it'll be picked up. I'm still on the policy council, but, you know, it's...
What's going on elsewhere in the South? Have you had to break it down state by state on a scale of 10, 1 to 10, say 10 is, you know, tops? Where would you rate North Carolina? You know, active, women have overcome the psychological barriers have been broken. People are running now. They're beginning to get elected. It's a genuine start of women running for office who are oriented toward
change for women issues.
Change for women. And before you get on that, what change for women represents what? What are the issues that represent change for women? Why do women get in politics? The kind of women you like to see in politics. Why do they get involved in politics?
Well, I think the women who get in politics have been concerned about good government for a long time. They're now concerned about good government, education, child care, and women's issues.
Right, women's issues being
And also, I would say about minorities. Women's issues are, for example, Marilyn Bissell did get bills passed on credit in North Carolina.
To do what?
I haven't read the bills, but I'm sure what the bills, one of them had to do with lending institutions. That is, lending institutions cannot discriminate against a person because of sex. Banks and other lending institutions will often refuse to value a wife's salary at exactly what it is in terms of getting a mortgage. A widow can't get one if she's still in childbearing age. As a matter of fact, one of our state legislators had been turned down, a widow who had four children, and she happened to have enough, plenty of money. And she was told by a savings and loan that she couldn't get a loan, and she asked why, and they said because she was still in childbearing age. So these are the kinds of things that that this legislation is aimed at, I'm sure. Plus, getting credit in your own name. If you have a husband, it's hard to get credit in your own name. Therefore, if your husband dies, you're bad off because you know your credit's in his name and not yours. And then... the so-called protective laws in North Carolina don't protect women. There is no protection for women in North Carolina whose husbands desert them. It is a North Carolina law that anything that's jointly owned, all the income belongs to the husband. And, you know, I could just go on and on. We have no reciprocity with regard to alimony payments with other states, so that a husband can leave. I mean, the big theory, of course, has been that alimony and child support is a, quote, protection, unquote, for the female. And actually, it isn't. 50% of people who are ordered to pay alimony are no longer paying alimony at the end of 1 year. And that's just one thing this state doesn't have that some states do in terms of some kind of agreement with other states that will allow them to find the husband. And of course, you see, it's the low-income people who suffer, you know, on that one. But there are many, many laws. We would like to have a Fair Employment Practices law in North Carolina. We don't want one that's Mickey Mouse. We want one with teeth, which would set up a Fair Employment Practices Commission, which would have subpoena powers and which would have powers to penalize for, you know, failure to comply. And
based on both sex and race?
Yeah, sure, and age. Sure, we want them all in there. Sex, age, and race. Because, you see, there are employers who are not touched by federal laws. People who have 15 or less, that's a lot of employers. So those are some of the things. Daycare is another one. I mean, there's been a recent daycare study of the state, and I think it's only about 5 or 6% of the children who need daycare are in adequate daycare centers of some such figure. It's a very low figure.
My understanding is that Senator Mike Mullins from Charlotte was defeated, mm-hmm. and that a major reason for his defeat was his switch on ERA that he had promised to support.
I hope it was. We sure wanted to see him out.
Do you know of any other politician in any other southern state who's been defeated of taking that kind of position on that specific issue?
No, I've heard of somebody in Illinois, but that's not to say there's been no one defeated. I'm not sure. Florida's a possibility for that.
How about Texas?
I think Texas is a possibility, too.
All right, now getting back to my question about if you rank the southern states on a scale of 1 to 10, and not in rank order, but how would you rank each one in so far as progress at this stage on development of sensitivity of women to politics?
I expect Florida, Texas, and North Carolina, there's more going on in those three states than any of the rest of them.
Where would you rank them on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 at the top.
Well, what is your 1 to 10, 1 being poor and 10 being very good,
right,
in terms of what would be ideal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very difficult. You know, this change is going to take a long time. And
I know, but at this stage.
You know, we have very few comparisons. I mean,
but you're one of the few people who have some sort of a Southwide outlook and have some insight in what's going on in all the states.
If you're saying 1 to 10 in the South, that's easier.
I'd say 1 to 10 in the South.
Well, those three would have to be at the top end.
Where would they rank? I mean, 8, 9, 10?
Well, certainly you couldn't rank them. Nobody's made it. I suppose 6 or 7, and the rest of them would be clustered around 2 and 3.
Is there any difference in the other 8? Which ones would be 3s and which ones 2s?
Well, there's nothing going in Mississippi.
So it's a 1.
So it would be a 1 in terms of... There may be some women running just because of the general thing in the country, but I would say very little. There are one or two women who are on the national scene, but there's just really nothing going in the state. There's not a bad caucus in Tennessee, so that would have to be up some from that.
Right.
Maybe it would have to be probably a 4. There's not much going statewide in Alabama, though there's caucus activity around the Birmingham area, and women have run for public office. Women have run for Congress down there, as you know, I'm sure. I was hopeful that this woman in the Birmingham area would win, but I guess she got beat by a Republican.
What would you rate Alabama? About a 2?
Yeah, because that even though women have run, there's very little.
How about Louisiana?
There's just not much going. It's not too far from Mississippi. If Mississippi won, Louisiana would be 2.
Arkansas
is pretty good. That would have to go up. Judy Petty is a caucus member. I was hoping that she would beat Wilbur Mills. Arkansas would be next, maybe, after Florida, Texas, and North Carolina, and then Tennessee.
Right. Arkansas run a 5?
Yeah.
Okay, how about...
This is, you know, the last I knew that.
How about Georgia?
Tennessee, let me explain to you, Tennessee has a statewide women's political caucus, and they're strong. They haven't had the women running for the legislature, for example, that we have. So they have an organization, they're active, and they're trying
to affect
issues. They haven't
overcome the psychological barrier.
I think maybe that's right. And also they've been fighting, and that never helps. Memphis is fighting Nashville and all that kind of stuff.
How about Georgia?
Georgia is kind of sad. Georgia and maybe Florida too, I don't know, in terms of the way they organized, was... I know some states out of the South which made all the mistakes, and Georgia is right in that category. They didn't get the women who were already active in politics and on the ground floor. They didn't get the Republicans. They started with only Atlantans. They started with only middle class. You know, just every mistake in the books. And as a result, the last I knew, they didn't have but about 25 caucus members, and all of them were in Atlanta. So, and they made incredible mistakes on ERA. They got all mixed up with the Gay Women's Alliance or some such, and had Gloria Steinem down there. I mean, just really blow your mind, you know, if you're talking about political strategy. And they're going to have a march this time. Some of them asked me if they, you know, something about a march, and I said, you know, you shouldn't have a march. If you want to get ERA passed in Georgia. Oh, well, we're going to show them. And I said, well, which do you want, you know? Which has priority, chance at ERA or a march? I said, you can have a mass meeting. That's different. But, you know, a march has negative connotations with banners and everything. Anyway, they're going to have their march. So I don't think that they have a strategy which is calculated to get at the boondocks legislators, which is what they're going to have to do. And it is really, whatever is going is totally in Atlanta.
So where do you read Georgia? Was it two?
Well, if Mississippi and Louisiana won, yeah, Georgia's about a two.
How about South Carolina?
Not much going in South Carolina. There's a group in Columbia, I believe. And there were very few of them. And I really don't know what's happened to them. I don't think that they have, done anything statewide. There may be groups here and there, but I doubt that they've made much of an impact.
They did have some sort of beating issue.
Did they? Well, there were people from Columbia, and there were some people from Columbia that went to Houston to the first national meeting of women since Seneca Falls. But, I had at one time was in conversation with some of them, and they were good people. I don't think that they were off on the tack like the Georgia people, which was, you know, ill-starred from the beginning. I just don't know how much they picked up, that's all.
So what would you rate on it, two or three?
Oh, I probably, yeah.
Which one? Would you rate
my
Georgia
knowledge
two?
Is too sketchy. If I rate...
maybe a three.
If I rate Georgia two, maybe a three.
And how about Virginia?
Well, Virginia has got, a pretty well-organized caucus. To tell you the truth, I forgot about Virginia. If Virginia would have to be following the three states, then Arkansas, then Virginia. However, theirs happens to be concentrated in the, up in the Washington area. Richmond, Washington.
About a four or five.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you got the top, Texas, Florida, and North Carolina, which, if you had to rate one of them at the top, which would it be?
Well, you have to make a determination there.
Are they pretty much equal?
I don't know. Texas is pretty good. I do not know anything about how many women, ran for the legislature in Texas, or how they fared. Which I think in the final analysis is what we're working for, plus getting into the party decision-making process. I would say that if you look at it this way, my guess is that the Florida party could afford less to ignore the women than the Texas party. I'm thinking now the Democratic Party. I don't know about the Republican. We in North Carolina had much more of a bipartisan caucus than any state in the United States. We're the only state that had big dog Republicans. Well, I won't say that. We were one of the few that had the, caliber Republicans in on the ground floor that we did. most states, it's mostly Democrats. The Floridians don't have the Republicans. Did not have them in like we did. I'm sure there've got to be some others that have them in there, but they're not all that many. And I think we were one of the best in terms of being bipartisan caucus. So I really tend to be, thinking more in the South, certainly in terms of the Democratic Party. The Tennessee Democratic Party just is trying to ignore the women. They consider them enemies or something.
I'm not sure if that's still true.
Well, I saw Martha Raglan last weekend, I mean, she couldn't even get information from the state party headquarters, and she filed a challenge, which was summarily dismissed by the national committee. And they've got some Republicans in Tennessee. So It's hard for me to say since I don't know how they fared at the polls. Florida has, Sylvia Meyer was telling me, they have 4 women in the delegation from Miami out of about 30-something, for whatever that's worth. They have at least two black women legislators, which is good. One from Jacksonville, Mary Singleton, one from Miami, Gwen Cherry. I don't know what their total is. I doubt anybody's where we are.
Unless it's Texas. I haven't been there yet.
I don't think Texas is. But I wouldn't swear to it. I don't think so. I think even California doesn't have as many women legislatures as we do. Women have worked here for years, as you know, and as they've worked everywhere. And I
but
think
it's only been since the caucus that the number really showed any dramatic increase. Isn't that correct?
How many
was it before 72?
Nancy Chase and...
And there were 8 in 72, right?
9. There were 2.
So it went from 2 to 9 to 13, and after the caucus jumped from 2 to 13 in 3 years. So,
right.
Do you attribute that to the caucus's influence?
Yeah, I think the caucus had a lot to do with it. And one reason I think, if we're more successful, one reason is that the caucus was in no way a fringe group. Never was.
Was there any connection, say, with the League of Women Voters? Oh,
well, we had people from everywhere to begin with. We had Margaret Harper. You know, we had all the old hands. What's her name from down there? Wilson. Former vice chair people. We did the same thing on the Republican side. Thelma Rogers, who's been National Committee Woman of the Republican Party for 25 years, you know, was all for it. Yes, Count Me In was on the platform in Durham and so forth. So from the very beginning, it was very clearly not a fringe group. It was very clearly people who had been centrally involved in politics.
That is an unusual aspect, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and as far as our sponsoring organizations, how did we word it? We asked organizations to call the meeting, but we worded it so that they wouldn't have to put it through their boards because we knew that would slow it down. So we made up not whatever word we used, and I still have the flyer. And as I say, may not have been sponsor, but we fixed it so they wouldn't have to run it through their board. So as conveners, that's right, as co-conveners, we had the League of Women Voters, the United Church Women, the Federation of Women's Clubs, the United Negro Women's Clubs, or whatever that one is called, AFL-CIO, NOW. Everything you can think of that we could think of, we had was co-conveners. We also had as conveners the 2 party vice chair women and the 2 national committee women.
So is there a formal constitution?
Well, bylaws.
Bylaws.
There is now.
It was North Carolina Women's Political Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been any problems with the bipartisan aspect of it?
Well, yeah, I think... There are some Democrats who take a dim view of Democratic women supporting a bipartisan thing, but that, you know, has never bothered us any. Republicans have probably protested less because they have less to lose. In fact, they had everything to gain, and indeed did gain something back because of the caucus. I don't think they would have had 4 women legislators from up around that Charlotte area if it hadn't been for the caucus. I think Democratic votes put them in. And that's okay. They were good legislators. If they weren't good, I'm sure the women wouldn't vote for them again. But, and we certainly found out in the legislature, in the final analysis, just as the blacks have found out, only women put women's issues first. I got to get a drink. After so long a time, I know what apparently Democratic Party leaders don't know. And that is that if you really want to pull in people, you involve them in the decision-making. They can't seem to get that through their thick skulls.
You're talking about North Carolina Democrats?
Everywhere. The only state I've heard of that sounds just great to me is Minnesota. And damn it, if you're in Minnesota, you can be involved. They have all kind of structures and open decision making and everything else.
How about Florida?
The party? I don't know for sure, but I don't get that picture.
Government is very open.
Oh, sure.
That's why I was asking.
Yes.
I don't know about the party.
No, I don't think the party is. But I think, you know, the people...
Tell me about the psychological. You know, I keep referring to it, but as though I know, but I'm not sure that I do. What are the major psychological problems of women in politics, or getting women involved in politics?
Well, you know, there's not... in the South, you're going to have characteristics by region. You certainly do in North Carolina. In the Piedmont, it's no problem. In Eastern North Carolina, if they can go behind the curtain and market, they're likely to vote for women and support women, but in open meeting, forget it. You know? In fact, I had a very great demonstration. When we worked for ERA, Democratic Party women who had come to our caucus meeting and were in total sympathy, but who hadn't been central, worked as if ostensibly outside the caucus. They worked strictly as party functionaries on ERA. But we were in constant telephone communication. That was our strategy. And that's important in Eastern North Carolina. And I went down there to speak at a Democratic meeting or something. And I was told by, you know, one of the women who had done a lot of work for the ERA, who's a good friend of mine, that people wouldn't make a verbal commitment in a meeting. They wouldn't come out and make commitments in a meeting. And sure enough, we took one or two of their state legislators were at this meeting. And for some reason or other, we asked for some indication of support for the ERA, an open meeting. And it was, I don't know, like split even, let's say. Something like that. We later on asked for something written with no names, and we had about a 2/3-4. It's very interesting. But, you know, that's a different... You know, you have all the things that go with the Eastern North Carolina, where you have all the syndromes, the old South business. You know.
How much of a factor is fundamentalist religion?
Well, we haven't seen it at all, except as far as ERA is concerned. Then we saw it.
What did you find? What did you see there?
Well, the same kinds of things that Schlafly talks about, you know. Women are protected, you know, both by the law and the law of the state and the law of God, and this is the natural order of things, and God never meant women to go to war and all such stuff as that. Selected quotations from the Bible about the wife being, what is it, subservient to her husband or whatever it is, you know. But mostly, you know, the law, the man is the head, and women were meant to stay home and take care of the children. They were not meant to go to war and so forth. And as a lawyer friend of mine says, who's the top constitutional lawyer, the only woman in North Carolina who's really protected is the woman who is happily married, who has a husband who's well-to-do and generous, who doesn't work, and who has assurances that both of them are going to live, you know, till ripe old age. That's the only woman who's protected. But at any rate, what is happening, another thing into this whole process is what is happening. We talk about these issues, right? Like, we aren't really protected. There's no such thing as protection law. We talk about credit. We talk about equal pay and so on and so forth. And more and more groups are talking about this, you see, not just the caucus, but lots of other groups. All of a sudden, something happens to some woman that has heard this, either read it, maybe even read it in the paper, and she begins to have experiences. You know, maybe she loses her husband, maybe he splits, maybe she walks out, whatever happens, all of a sudden, like that. And that's happening, too, all along as we go along, so that your cadre becomes larger. So that's a thing we haven't mentioned at all, but it's happening.
Is there a natural correlation with blacks?
I think there is, sure.
How about in the political level, is it happening?
Well, Howard Lee and I talked about that last weekend. We certainly want it to happen. You know, you don't go out and have a big mass meeting together, but... before I advised this woman who came to me advice about running for lieutenant governor, I will talk at her with Howard. I will tell her. That's what I told her. I want to talk at her with Howard before I talk with you. That doesn't mean I'm going to say don't run. That means, doesn't mean if I say don't run that she won't run. I probably won't say don't run. I'll probably say here's the situation. Now, we may decide it would be to Howard's advantage for her to run. It depends on how many people file. But certainly, yes. I mean, we both tried to do that in Miami in 72. Tried to get far enough with the women's agenda and the blacks' agenda, that is, forming caucuses and getting an agenda, to get to the point where, you know, people begin to see that we did have to.
But on the legislative level, do you see it happening in the various states?
Well, I see it here. Michaud was a big help to us in the ERA. Damn right. And then they came
to... I talked to him today. He thinks it's going to pass.
Well, I mean, we got rid of a lot of the SOBs, you know, so... Michaud was the only one that stood up there in joint committee meetings and asked any kind of hard question at all. And,
The fact that people like Mullins lost is going to be... could be... may well end up being a signal to the other legislators, right?
I hope so. And Summers, he's really bad news. Really bad, and he lost. There'll be
who is he? I don't know.
He's from, I believe he's from Rowan County. Fought it tooth and toenail. But even the Republicans don't like him, so. There'll be some Democrats who will say that these people lost because of the Democratic sweep.
How do you interpret the North Carolina election returns this year? There are some who say that in addition to Watergate and the economy, it also represented a repudiation of the Holzhauser administration. That's the only way to explain why North Carolina Republicans lost so much more than any place else.
I don't know. You know, a lot of people voted straight ticket in Tennessee. Tennessee picked up a lot. Of course, they had more to pick up than we did because they had more Republicans.
But the Republicans lost about 10 seats in the House in Tennessee. They lost, 39 or 40 seats?
I know, but they had 50%. And, you know, they had a gubernatorial candidate that was just really, not cutting the mustard. That's from what I understand.
And you mean the Democrats?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was like toss a coin. That's what I understood. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's what came through to me. That picture came through to me. Neither one of them was making a big impact on the voters. So.
But the point is, you had in North Carolina an incumbent Republican governor who was actively campaigning, who had handpicked his candidates.
Well, I don't think there was any repudiation of Holzhauser.
Was it a repudiation of the Holzhauser administration as opposed to a repudiation of Holzhauser?
Some of that could have been in there. But I think they made bad mistakes, bad political mistakes in, you know, the Edmundston tax thing. I'm talking about the Republicans. I think that Holzhauser has had some mediocre to lousy appointments. And I think they've embarrassed him, or at least, you know, what they've done hasn't looked too good. Of course, people forget that the Democrats have had incredibly bad appointments also. But anyway, I don't think it was a repudiation of Holzhauser. I think most people think Holzhauser's done a pretty good job. I think some of his appointments are lousy myself.
If they think he's done a good job, then why were they out there voting a straight Democratic ticket?
But I don't think it was. I don't think it was because of Holzhauser. I think it was more because of the economy, because of Watergate. And I suspect that the machinations that toward the end there with regard to Edmonston hurt. I think that probably did hurt. It's very dumb on their part. I suspect it has hurt him in his own, you know, in his party because of the fight between the two wings. I think that's probably hurt more than it hurt there more than him personally.
What do you think? It was a fight between the two wings of the Republican Party that did more damage?
No, I mean, I'm not saying I did not say that did more damage in terms of the outcome of the election. I suspect that the outcome of the election did more damage to the Holzhauser wing of the party than it did to Holzhauser personally. I still think that he gets credit for having, you know, done a pretty fair job. I think he's swept up by this thing.
Where does it leave the North Carolina Republican Party?
Well, in very bad shape is where it leaves it.
Does it leave them out of contention for 76?
I don't know. You see, as a matter of fact, there are some Democrats that are gleeful about it, but I'm not sure they should be because, we need a two-party system. And if we're going to have one, God knows we need the Holzhausers instead of the Jesse Helms. And this election will, you know, play into the hands of Jesse Helms as far as the Republican Party is concerned. So I see him as a strong person for 76 in the Republican Party. A strong person. I think it made him stronger is what I think.
Strengthen him.
I think so.
Within the Republican
Party. Within the Republican
Party. Oh, yeah.
Party. Sure.
Sure, because he's having a sideline.
That's right. He's been doing that. So I think it's true.